The following message is presented by Mooringsport Baptist Church in Mooringsport, Louisiana. For more information, go to the website www.mooringsportbaptistchurch.org. Now the message.
I want to do something I've never done before. This morning, I've never done this. What I want to do is to try to preach on the 23rd Psalm. It was 40 years into the ministry before I ever dared preach on John 3:16. It was in everything I preached. I believed it all. I quoted it often. I pointed people to it, but I didn't think I was adequate to handle it. You know, when you said John 3:16, you said it all. Yeah, how do you go about improving or explaining or amplifying that? And so it was 40 years into the ministry before I dared announce and attempt to preach on John 3:16. And now here I am. I began preaching when I was 15. I'm 76. Here's 61 years into the ministry. And for the first time, not that I feel capable, but for the first time, I want to try to preach on the 23rd Psalm. It's in almost everything I preach, and I quoted it and pointed people to it and used it, but I've never preached. I've never preached on the 23rd Psalm. So you're about to hear a virgin attempt here, all right? This is the first trip around the block for this message, and I pray that I'll be able to lay out for you at least some of the treasures that are in this psalm. There's more here than you can shake a stick at. And I'll be pleased if I just get some of it out and give you something to think about and bring before you a great challenge today to be able to say with David, the Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. Father, help us as we approach this psalm today. We're on sacred ground. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's read this psalm. Psalm of all psalms. The superscription says, a psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd. I want you to notice that's in all capital letters. More on that in a moment. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness. Or you may have a footnote at the bottom of your page that says, or right paths. And I think that's the proper understanding here. It's not an idea that God leads you to do always the right thing, but that he leads you in the right way. He leads you in right paths for his name's sake. More on that in a moment. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I have some images that I sent. I haven't coordinated exactly how they're to be used. Okay, that's good right there. Let me point out that the superscription says it is a psalm of David. Look at that pretty Hebrew letter. That is the Hebrew letter Lameth, equivalent to our L. Lameth, Mem, Nun, Sadi, Kof, Resh, Shin, etc. But it's the equivalent of the English L. That's the Lameth. And when the psalm says, a psalm of David, it says le, Lameth with a short E on it, le Dawith, which is how you pronounce David's name in Hebrew, le Dawith. Does that mean that David wrote this psalm? Well, not necessarily, because that one little letter, that serving as a preposition, can be translated by David, a psalm by David, that is, that one that he wrote, composed, a psalm for David, somebody else wrote on his behalf, a psalm to David that somebody wrote to be sung to him, or even a song about David, that is, someone who is praising the great king of Israel. I take it that it should be translated as it is. This is a psalm that was written by, composed by the great, the sweet singer of Israel, the great King David himself. Now, his song is about the Lord, and this is where I need that second image there, if you will, please. Because in the Hebrew language, the Lord is the personal name of God. And if you look at this, I'm going to turn around and look this way so I can point it out to you. Hebrew reads right to left. We read left to right, but Hebrew goes right to left. So you have a yod over on the right-hand side. That's the smallest letter in the Hebrew language. That's the one Jesus referred to when he said, not a jot or a tittle shall pass from the law until all is fulfilled. Smallest letter in the Hebrew language. It's equivalent to a Y or a J in the English language. Then you have a hey, which is an H in English, the one that looks like this, with a stroke under the bar. And then you have one that looks like this, shalom. That is a wall, or they teach them to say these days, a vav. It's equivalent to a W or a V. Then you have another hey over here, a stroke like this, followed by a stroke under the crossbar. Now, bring this to your attention because the word is in all caps. There are four letters. They're all consonants. And none of us know how to say that. You know why? Because there's a commandment that says, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. For God will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Well, what does that mean? What's God going to do to me if I take his name in vain? I don't want to know. So I don't take his name at all for fear that I will take it in vain. That's what the Jewish people did. And so over the years, they've forgotten how to pronounce that name. They do not know how to say that name. Most scholars just use Yahweh. I won't go into all the reasons why, but that is the personal name of God. Anytime in the Bible that you see Lord in all capital letters, it is that. It is the personal name of God. There's another name, another word in Hebrew language for Lord. It's the word Adonai. It's a different word altogether. But they put it in all caps so that you will know this is Yahweh. This is the personal name of Almighty God. Though nobody nowadays knows how to say it, that's what it is. And one other thing, I think I put in your notes, Yahweh of the Old Testament is Jesus of the New. I think there's something in there that shows how Old Testament language that has to do with Yahweh, this person here, is applied in the New Testament to Jesus. When your Jehovah's Witness friends come calling and say, Jesus is a mighty God, but not the mighty God, you can point out to them the language used of Yahweh in the Old Testament is applied to Jesus in the New. Jesus of the New is Yahweh of the Old. He is the God who comes among men and always has been. All right, with that rather long introduction, let's move on into Psalm 23. It is a song of praise about Yahweh. I may say God, I may say the Lord, I may say Yahweh. I'm referring to the same being all the time. In the 23rd Psalm, David celebrated the Lord with three pictures. And I want to point these out to you and show you how significant they are and how what David claimed in his relationship with God can be yours in your relationship with God. That's the important thing to draw out of this. David said, first of all, Yahweh is my shepherd in verses 1-3. Did you hear about the little girl in Sunday school whose teacher asked her to quote Psalm 23? And she gladly agreed, and this is how she began. The Lord is my shepherd, that's all I want. Well, she got right to the heart of things, didn't she? If the Lord's your shepherd, that's all you want. That's all you need. You don't need anything else because the Hebrew text here literally reads, I lack nothing I need. Now, still keeping that image of a shepherd and his sheep, David in the first three verses goes on here to explain what he means. If the Lord is my shepherd, I have no wants. I have no needs that are unmet. And so he explains that. My shepherd, for example, he says, makes me lie down in green pastures. The Hebrew text simply says greennesses. He makes me lie down in greennesses. That's a rich, sweet, tender grass. In greennesses, he makes me lie down. I hope you've been in or around a desert somewhere, if I could see that image, that desert up there. Listen, that is a real shot of the Judean desert. Off in the background, you can see the beginnings of the Dead Sea, and you see the mountains of Jordan, right on the other side of the Jordan River. But you see that wild, bare thing. Often we talk about that as the wilderness, but it ain't no Daniel Boone wilderness. Listen, it is a high, dry desert. The reason is clouds come in from the west. They get hung on the mountain ridge that Jerusalem sits on, and very little rain falls on this side, on the east side of the mountains. So very little grass grows. When rain does fall, grass grows. Sometimes I've seen that where it was just as green as my yard is right now because they got some pretty heavy rains through there. And there's seed out there, and the soil is fertile. It will grow if it just gets water, just like in the American West. You know, sometimes it rains out there, and flowers pop up, and grass grows, and it's very, very fertile. The same with the Judean desert. That's what that image is right there. But in that desert, unless they get some water, nothing much grows. It's just bare ground. Occasionally they have big rains and lots of grass will grow, but occasionally there are just little scattered showers, right? Little places. The shepherd watches for those and leads his sheep in that direction because he knows they will find rich, tender, green grass to eat. The sheep will never find that on their own. They need a shepherd to lead it to them. And so David said, my shepherd keeps an eye out for me and he leads me where I can find something good to eat. Not only that, but he said he makes me lie down there. That is a double image because sheep move steadily as they graze. They don't stand still in one spot and graze around them. They're always moving. And their heavy coat of wool tends to trap heat so that their body heat rises pretty quickly if they don't get out of the sun and into some rest. And it can kill them. They can die from heat stroke. And so the shepherd keeps an eye out for his flock. And when the sun burns down fiercely, he has them lie down in cooler spots and chew their cud. The point is the shepherd takes care of those sheep. My shepherd watches after me. He puts me where there's green grass to eat. And what's more, he makes sure that I don't overheat. Overheat. Heat. H-E-A-T. Overheat. Or overeat either, for that matter. But he makes sure I don't do that. My shepherd makes me lie down in greennesses. David strummed his lyre, his little harp, and sang with more assurance, my shepherd leads me beside still waters. There we go. Look at that. Most of the time, sheep got their water from a cistern or from a well, but there are in Israel some oases. This is one of them. This is in Gedi. That's the waterfall of David at Gedi, the place that he fled Saul. Fled away from Saul and stayed there for a while. If you could see the rest of it coming on out this way, there are caves there where probably David was when Saul came in to use the bathroom and David cut the tail end of his robe off. You know that story? These are the falls of David at Engedi. So occasionally the shepherd would have to take his sheep to where there was moving water. That's a problem. Sheep fear moving water. They're scared of it because they're notoriously poor swimmers. And if they ever got in the water, their wool would get waterlogged and they might not be able to get out. And so they won't go near it. They will not drink from moving water. If they drank from a pool like this, what would have to happen is the shepherd would have to take small stones and dam up a pool. so the water would be still and the sheep would have confidence enough to drink. David said, you know, my shepherd leads me beside still waters. And then he sang further. He said, yeah, my shepherd restores my soul. When the day was long and David was left worn out, the shepherd gave him new strength. I love a translation I ran across several years ago. It says, my shepherd puts his hands on my head and all the tired departs. You ever been there? I've been there. I remember many times when I was a pastor in Kansas City, visiting the hospitals was an all-day affair. I'd start at 6 in the morning and sometimes wouldn't wind up until 5 in the afternoon, just about enough time to grab a bite and go to prayer meeting. I've been in hospitals and or getting to them all day long. And I would come into prayer meeting sometime with a headache, sometime with low energy, sometime just worn out. Sometime I just wanted to go home and lay down. I just wanted to go lay down and rest a little bit. But you know, we got started worshiping God, and it was like the shepherd put his hands on my head, and all the tired departed. I wasn't tired anymore. I think that's what David was talking about. David picked up his lyre and strummed again, and he said, when I'm weary and worn, the shepherd picks me up and revives my spirit and refreshes my strength. There's one more comment about his shepherd. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And when we read this to begin with, I said, I believe the margin is correct here, the marginal translation. He leads me in right paths. That is, he's a good shepherd. He doesn't lead me down wrong paths. He leads me in right paths. Why? For his name's sake. Now, what does that mean? Well, name in the Bible always means character. It points to character. And so David may be saying, he leads me in all the right ways. If we're headed for the fold, he gets me there. If we're headed out to graze, he gets me there. If we're looking for water, he gets me there. He leads me in the right paths for his name's sake. That is because of his character. That's just the kind of God he is. And aren't you glad he leads us in all the right ways because that's just the kind of God he is. Hey, I know a lot about a lot of gods that are worshipped in this world, and Yahweh is the only one worthy of worship because he leads us in the right ways for his name's sake. Or it may mean he leads us in right paths to glorify himself, for his name's sake, to get honor and glory as the shepherd. It would damage his reputation if he led us in wrong paths, wouldn't it? I was reading just this morning. I used to tease my mother when, before she died, I would visit with her and find her reading her Bible. And I said, what you doing, Mom? Cramming for finals or what? You know, that may not be very respectful, but she knew me. She raised me. She helped give me that sense of humor, and she tolerated it. Whether she enjoyed it or not, it's a different issue, but she tolerated it. Hey, here's the deal. I'm on the crusade to reread my Bible, and I'm cramming for finals, all right? And I was reading just this morning about how the children of Israel had refused to go in and take Canaan. They sent in the 12 spies, got negative reports. They said, we can't do that. And so Moses and God were in this conversation, and Moses said to God, God said, I'm going to destroy them and start over with you. And Moses said, you can't do that. Just think what all the Egyptians and what all the Amalekites and what all the Amorites and all these other ites and isms and schisms and spasms and whatever else was around over there. Just think what they would say. Their God led them out into the wilderness, but he couldn't get them home. They died in the wilderness. Just think about your reputation, God. What kind of reputation do you want in this heathen world? And I think that's kind of what David was talking about right here. When he said, for his name's sake. for his honor, for his glory, to maintain his reputation as spotless. He leads in right paths. And so David strummed his lyre, hummed a note, and then he said, "My shepherd helps me do what honors him the most. He leads us. He leads me in right paths." So as Yahweh, David sang, "He is my shepherd who provides for me through every day, over all the way." Can I tell you this morning, he is my shepherd too, and he is available to be yours. You can say of him exactly what David did. He'll provide for you just like he did for David and has for me. Well, I must rush home. We have further to go. In verse 4, if you will, have a look at that. "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Usually a shepherd leads by gentle ways, but sometimes the path passes through deep valleys where it dips out of sight and into dark shadows. I want to show you what every Jew will take you to and show you if you ask about the valley of the shadow of death. You know it's impossible to get perspective from just a photo. You have to stand there and see this. This is a part of a great gorge, part of a 12-mile stretch of the main road between Jericho and Jerusalem. That sucker is about 700 feet deep. That's about like a seven-story building. Okay? In fact, I used to tell groups, when I was taking groups there, I would tell them as they stood at the rim and looked down, I said, "You know, don't worry about falling, because it's so deep that if you fail, you'd starve to death before you hit the bottom." No worries, mate, no worries, you know. That, in fact, is the monastery of St. George. You know St. George and the dragon? That is named after him, but it's built into the side of that gorge. This is a terrible, terrible place. Twisting paths, torturous climbs make it a hard road. And you get little direct light at the bottom. You see how it curves back and forth, so that there, in places, there are only a couple of hours of direct sunlight every day. And then the sun moves on, and the place is left in shadows, and then the gloom, and then early evening. Very little direct sunlight in the bottom. There are caves and blind corners. There are wild animals and poisonous snakes. Spring rains send flash floods through places like that. Sometimes it rains back up in the hill country near Jerusalem. The water has to go to the Dead Sea, and a lot of it will come down this gorge as well as other gorges like it. In fact, one year I had a tour group there, and I saw a flash flood wash a tour bus off into the Dead Sea. Water just cascading down a canyon just like that one. Listen, this is called the Wadi Kelt. The Wadi Kelt, Q-E-L-T, Wadi Kelt. It is a dangerous place. But if you were following the shepherd, you had to go there. If the shepherd went, you had to go. And so at this point, David's song grew more personal. He didn't say, "The Lord is my shepherd." He said, "You are with me. You are with me." The Lord is third person. Not totally impersonal, but more so. But there's no doubt about what "you" is. You are my shepherd. Sometimes you lead through deep shadows, and you lead near dangers. But I fear not, because you are with me. "Thy rod and thy staff," he said, "they comfort me." Look at that. Some sheep in the background, a rod and a staff in the foreground. Those are shepherd's tools of trade. That rod was a stick with a root at the end of it that had been shaped and polished, and a skilled shepherd could throw it like a tomahawk or swing it like a billy club. It was a defensive weapon. And then you see the shepherd's crook there. If a sheep got in trouble, if he was near a dangerous ledge or a coiled serpent, or if he was getting near a patch of thorns, the shepherd could reach out with that crook and pull him back and help him out of that difficulty. David sang on, "You are my guard. I will not fear. You are with me. You will protect me, even in the valley of the shadow of death." When I was a teenager, a fellow named Hugh Mercer came to visit my church, East Winfield Baptist Church in Winfield, Louisiana. He had with him his two sons. You may know them. Elmo Mercer, the composer of "Each Step I Take," among other songs, and Earl Mercer, who worked for the Louisiana Baptist Children's Home in Monroe for years and years and years and years. I think he took that job when he got off the ark. But he was there for a number of years. And they came with their daddy to a service. I was about 14 or 15. But I will never forget it. We had ended the last song of the morning standing. And so we all sat, the pastor stepped to the pulpit, opened his Bible, and began to preach. All of us sat, that is, except Mr. Mercer. He remained standing. He's standing like right there. And I was on the third bench, he was on the second bench. And he didn't sit down. And so a minute or two into the sermon, our pastor, a very gracious man, stopped and said, "Mr. Mercer, is there something we can do for you?" Mr. Mercer said, "I want a song." So our pastor said, "Let's all stand and sing Amazing Grace." And so everybody stood and at the top of their lungs sang Amazing Grace. And then we all sat down, except for Mr. Mercer. He said, "That ain't the song I want." And so he proceeded to sing. And it was a ballad. It had about 12 verses to it. At the end of each chorus, his sons, seated one to each side, would tug at their dad's coattails, try to get him to sit down, but he didn't budge. He sang all the verses too. "You gotta cross that lonesome valley." Do you know that song? "You gotta cross it by yourself. Oh, nobody else can go there with you or cross it for you. You gotta go there by yourself." And not until he had finished his song did he sit down. He was satisfied. That was the song he wanted. Well, you know, I will never forget that, as is obvious. But his song, while true, tells only half the truth. It is not wrong as far as it goes. It just doesn't go as far as it should or could. Because everyone crosses that lonesome valley. And it's true, nobody can walk it for you. But nobody has to cross that valley of the shadow of death by themselves. Did you hear that? Nobody has to cross it by themselves. David lifted that psalm. "You will walk with me. You will walk with me down through the valley. And when you are with me, even the black angel of death becomes just a shadow. The shadow of a dog can't bite. The shadow of a sword doesn't cut, and the shadow of death cannot destroy. Because you are with me, all of those become shadows. You are my guard," he said, "who protects me every step of the way." Can I tell you today, he's my guard too, and he's available to be yours. You can say of him what David did, knowing that he will do for you what he did for David and has for me. There's a third picture here, and I promise to wind this up quickly. I'm full of my subject here, so forgive me. I'm sorry. David says, "Yahweh is my host." He is my host. I think David must have plucked more confidently and sang in a higher key, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." He could hardly believe it. "You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies." Please remember that in the East, to this day, a host has a sacred duty to protect guests in his home and to provide for them and offer hospitality. And so Yahweh, said David, set a table for me in front of my enemies. I don't know where the enemies were. Were they in the same tent David and his host were? Were they standing at the wings just looking in? Were they behind the tent plotting about what they would do with David once he got out from under that protection? I don't know where they were, but David said, prepared in the presence of my enemies, but he was under God's protection. And they couldn't do a thing about it except gnash their teeth and roll their eyes and just bellyache about it. That's all they could do. Couldn't do anything to harm him. But it has interested me. In fact, one of the first things that caught my eye when I was studying through this now many weeks ago, one of the first things that caught my eye was you prepare a table. You ever thought about how much time it takes to prepare a table? It takes time to prepare a table. A host, for example, would send a servant to kill and dress and put on a spit over a fire to roast some grain-fed beef or a young goat. The fatted calf of Luke 15 is grain-fed beef. Or, a baby goat of some kind. So that it would be cooking. They had to cook the meal. And while the men were taking care of trying to get the meat ready, the women were spreading tablecloths on carpets in tents such as you might see here. They gathered up and set out a feast. There was bread and cheese and milk and wine and honey and almonds and pistachios and olives and figs and pomegranates and grapes and oranges and lemons. Now, while they were preparing the table, what do you think the host and his guest, David, were doing? Maybe just sitting, indulging in small talk or maybe even large talk, I don't know. But they were just spending time together. The host didn't turn him out and say, I'll call you when dinner's ready. He sat with him and extended hospitality with him. And once the table was ready and the food was prepared, the two enjoyed a leisurely meal in perfect peace. Can I remind you that eating is one of the most intimate things you can do? When a young man wants to get to know a young lady a little better than he does, what does he normally do? He invites her for coffee or for lunch or for a dinner. It's an intimate act. So can I tell you, when Yahweh offers a meal to David or to you or to me, he offers himself. He offers himself to you. He wants a close relationship with you. Abraham was called the friend of God, and that was a shocking thing in his day. There wasn't a God anywhere in the Fertile Crescent that wanted to be anybody's friend. But Yahweh wanted to be the friend of Abraham and the friend of David. He's my friend, and he can be your friend as well. He anoints my head with oil, David said. You know, every rich man had a slave that was responsible for placing perfumed oil on the head of honored guests. That was to show respect and esteem. He welcomes me, David said, as his special guest. He honors me with oil on my head. My cup overflows. He fills my cup until the choice wine runs over the brim. That implies abundance, doesn't it? David said, God ain't stingy with me. He's not stingy, not at all. He's generous with me. And then he winds this up. Surely goodness and mercy shall pursue me. That's the word in the Hebrew. Normally that's what enemies do. They pursue you. They run you down. But this is what grace, goodness, and mercy do. It is God's goodness and God's mercy that chased down David. So the picture is the shepherd is out front leading. The sheepdogs are protecting from behind. Goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, And when in the days of my life on earth, David says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That speaks of being an eternal guest in the Lord's house. You see, to be a guest in God's house is not a thing of a day. It's not a thing of a week or a month or even of a year. To be a guest in God's house is to live with Him forever. Listen to this. Once a guest in Yahweh's house, always a guest in Yahweh's house. He's looking for a relationship with you. He is my host, said David, who welcomes me to His house now and forevermore. He is my host too. And He is available to be your host, to entertain you in the halls of glory forevermore. It was at the peak of his career that the people at his childhood home in Wales gave world-famous actor Richard Burton a grand reception to honor him. After several speeches by locals and some reminiscences and that kind of thing, Burton stood and said, is there anything special I can do for you? And his old pastor said, Richard, would you quote Psalm 23? Burton said, I don't know why you're asking me to do that, but I will under one condition. After I've quoted it, I want you to quote it. The old man said, well, I'm no actor, but I'll do it if that's what you want. Burton's rich baritone held his audience spellbound, and when he ended, it was to wild applause. The old pastor taught Burton the 23rd Psalm as a boy in Sunday school. He rose from his wheelchair, scarcely able to stand. His voice was feeble and quivering, but when he ended quoting Psalm 23, there wasn't a dry eye anywhere in the house. Somebody said, what made the difference? Burton got applause. He got only tears. And Burton says, I'll tell you, I reached your ears, but He reached your hearts. Because I know the psalm, but He knows the shepherd. Do you know the shepherd? David did. And it interests me that he doesn't refer to Yahweh as a guide, a guard, a host. The Lord is my. He is my shepherd. He is my guard. He is my host. He is that for me as well. And He is available to be that for you if you will have it. I envision people standing like this, pushing God to one side. On both sides, pushing God away. If you'll only give up your resistance, He will sweep in like a flood and bring a pardon, peace, and power and promise to your life. He'll do more for you than you ever dreamed possible if you will let Him. If you will let Him. Father, have your way in this invitation time today. I pray in Jesus' precious name. Lord, there are decisions that need to be registered. Give us grace and time to do that. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
The preceding message was presented by Mooringsport Baptist Church in Mooringsport, Louisiana. For more information about a relationship with Jesus Christ or about the church, including contact information, please go to our website, www.mooringsportbaptistchurch.org. Thank you for listening, and may God bless you.